You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in the history of the mysteries, then I suggest you use this time right now to gather up pen and paper and listen very carefully to what you will hear on this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Freemasonry is an occult secret society. And all Freemasons have aligned themselves with the occult. The word occult means hidden or secret, concealed from view, behind the veil, so to speak. This is the obvious conclusion that people with just a casual knowledge of the lodge are forced to realize. The word occult means deliberately kept hidden, not revealed to others. Now, how can Freemasonry avoid being classified as occult when the Mason is forbidden by oath not to reveal what goes on behind the closed doors of the lodge, even to his wife or his fellow church members? All Freemasons have definitely, without any doubt whatsoever, and by their own admission in their voluminous writings throughout the ages, participated in occult activities, ceremonies, and rituals. This is not an opinion, it's a fact. And the Masonic book, The Royal Ark, Its Hidden Meaning, documents quite a bit of it. Many Freemasons shudder at the word occult, which comes from the Latin meaning to cover, to conceal from public scrutiny, and the profane. That's you, folks. But anyone studying Freemasonry cannot avoid classifying Freemasonry among occult teachings. Tonight, we're going to take a look at some of the powerful people and organizations that have played a part in the modern occult revival. And I'm sure you will agree that we're going to find, as we study their teachings, that they all have one common denominator: Freemasonry. Anton LaVey, the high priest of the Church of Satan, with its headquarters in San Francisco, states that Masonic orders have contained the most influential men in many governments, and virtually every occult order has many Masonic roots. Freemasonry is not just an occult secret society. Freemasonry has served for over 200 years as a fertile recruiting ground for other occult orders. You see, men who have come together to practice Masonry have many times down through the years formed other organizations to plunge even deeper into the occult, the hidden mysteries, if you will. According to our research, the first group that actually used the Masonic Lodge for their evil designs was the infamous Bavarian Illuminati. This secret society was officially formed, that is, in the public eye, by Adam Weishaupt, professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University, on May the 1st, 1776. That's a very famous date throughout history. It is celebrated as the founding day of communism, of the Socialist International. May Day, as they call it, May 1st, was the day that they had huge parades celebrating the birth of communism in Red Square in Moscow during the height of the Soviet Union. As the plans of the Illuminati began to leak out, ladies and gentlemen, brave men took a stand and raised their voices in protest. One such man was John Robinson, a professor of natural philosophy at Edinburgh University and general secretary of the Royal Society of Edinburgh. In his book, Proofs of a Conspiracy, which you can still obtain, which was originally published in 1798, that's right, folks, 1798, Robinson thoroughly documented how Freemasonry served as the nursery school for the Illuminati. It was then discovered that this group and several associated lodges were the preparation school for another order of Freemasons who called themselves the Illuminated, and that the express aim of this order was to abolish, completely destroy, all independent and sovereign nations, to destroy Christianity, overturn all civil government, and establish themselves upon the throne of the world. The leaders of the so-called New Age movement, which is not new at all, it's just a repetition of a movement that has emerged and then gone underground when it was suppressed throughout history. The latest emergence before the New Age movement, so-called today, was during the 1930s when Hitler was rising to power in Germany. These leaders of the so-called New Age today have also found a friend in the friendly confines of the Masonic lodges. In the last two centuries, Freemasonry and the New Age movement have been intricately intertwined. The Scottish Rite Journal of the Southern Jurisdiction, which, by the way, before they changed the name, was called the New Age, between 1903 and 1990. That's when they changed the name to the Scottish Rite Journal of the Southern Jurisdiction. Why did they do that, folks? Well, because many of us were making the connection. We began to collect the New Age magazine. That was the name of it. New Age magazine was the official publication of the Scottish Rite Journal of the Southern Jurisdiction. And we began to read the admissions that they had made in their own publication over many years. Freemason Lynn F. Perkins wrote a book in 1972 titled New Age Youth and Masonry, What Every High School and College Graduate Should Know About Masonry. Now, folks, this book was dedicated to those of oncoming generations of youth who would build and operate the new order of the ages. Direct quote. He also wrote another book called Masonry in the New Age. And both of these books, ladies and gentlemen, are listed for sale in the 1991 McCoy Publishing and Masonic Supply Company catalog. The woman heralded as the mother of the modern New Age movement is Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Born in 1831, died 1891. Blavatsky was born in Russia and was known for her violent temper and her ability to swear in several languages. This behavior was no doubt intensified as a result of her drug addiction to hashish. She traveled all over the world, lecturing and practicing the occult. But her greatest impact by far, ladies and gentlemen, was through her writings. Her most famous book, The Secret Doctrine, is one of the foundational occult works of all time. Her preeminently wicked book made no distinction between the serpent and the God of the Bible and taught that Satan was the one that made man into a god. Notice, she didn't say that he promised man could become God or like God. She said that Satan was the one that made man into a god. Quote, once that the key to Genesis is in our hands, the scientific and symbolical Kabbalah unveils the secret. The great serpent of the Garden of Eden and the Lord God are identical. End quote. She continues saying, quote, thus Satan, once he ceases to be viewed in the superstitious, dogmatic, unphilosophical spirit of the churches, grows into the grandiose image of one who makes of a terrestrial a divine man, end quote. Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine and the organization she helped to found, known as the Theosophical Society, has certainly had an impact upon our culture. Anyone who has even done the least bit of study or research into the New Age movement and the fraternal orders that exist today will find not only a connection, but the connection. The Secret Doctrine was the first book that Sirhan Sirhan requested after he was jailed for the murder of Robert Kennedy. Adolf Hitler kept a copy of The Secret Doctrine at his bedside and was profoundly influenced by it. He was also a member of the Thule Society. Adolf Hitler was a disciple of Madame Blavatsky and was initiated into the meaning of her secret doctrines. He was tutored by men who were formerly theosophists themselves and had theosophists at his side until the very end of the war. This favorite book of Adolf Hitler's was also a favorite of Freemasonry's greatest philosopher, 33rd degree Mason Manly P. Hall. Hall spoke with unrestrained praise for Blavatsky's writings. He said this, "The Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled are Madame Blavatsky's gifts to humanity. and to those whose vision can pierce the menacing clouds of imminent disaster, it is no exaggeration to affirm that these writings are the most vital literary contribution to the modern world. No more can they be compared with other books than can the light of the sun be compared with the lamp of the glowworm. The Secret Doctrine assumes the dignity of a scripture. Manly P. Hall, in his work entitled The Phoenix, An Illustrated Review of Occultism in Philosophy, Los Angeles, California, The Philosophical Research Society, 1960, page 122. Blavatsky's organization, the Theosophical Society, was founded, folks, in 1875. Freemason Henry Steele Olcott was the president, with Freemason George H. Felt as vice president, and high-ranking American Freemason Charles Southern as a member. Also among the early members was the most powerful American Freemason of all time, Albert Pike, the Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite. Madame Blavatsky was such a favorite of Freemasons that she was issued a Masonic certificate in the Ancient and Primitive Rite of Masonry in 1877 and became herself a Freemason, an honor rarely bestowed upon a woman. In 1907, Annie Besant became the head of the Theosophical Society. Besant continued Blavatsky's love for Masonry by becoming a leader and earning the 33rd degree in a new organization called Co-Masonry, an order with rites that admitted women as well as men. On 19 February 1922, an alliance between Mrs. Besant's Co-Masonry and the Grand Orient of France was celebrated at the Grand Temple of the Droit Humain in Paris. Now, during the time that Annie Besant was head of the Theosophical Society, she labored to promote a young man from India, Jiddu Krishnamurti, as the Messiah. Her right-hand man in this endeavor was 33rd degree Freemason C.W. Leadbeater. This Freemason had a passionate desire for the deeper workings of the occult. Some sources claim Leadbeater was a pedophile homosexual. When the dark side of Freemasonry begins to be revealed and discussed, the question invariably arises: does participation in Masonic rituals lead to control of the individual? C.W. Leadbeater answers that question for us most decisively from an insider's point of view. Now pay very close attention to this, ladies and gentlemen. Leadbeater does more than give an affirmative answer to our question. He proceeds to describe the demon spirits he received in the various degrees of Freemasonry, at least what some people would call demon spirits. And here's what he says, quote, "The 30th degree brings its angel also, of appropriate character, a great blue diva of the first ray who lends his strength to the night, KH, somewhat as the crimson angel assists the ex and perfect brother of the Rose Cross. The 33rd degree gives two such splendid fellow workers spirits of gigantic size as compared to humanity and radiantly white in color." C.W. Leadbeater, The Hidden Life in Freemasonry. Notice it's titled The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, and he was a 33rd degree Grand Inspector General. The 33rd degree links, and this is his own words here, I'm still quoting him, "The 33rd degree links the sovereign Grand Inspector General with the spiritual king of the world himself, that mightiest of adepts who stands at the head of the Great White Lodge, in whose strong hands lie the destinies of Earth. Yet when one of these bright spirits is attached to us by a Masonic ceremony, we must not think of him either as a director or as an attendant, but simply as a co-worker and a brother. You see, I know that many of you thought that I had lost my mind when I said that he proceeds to describe the demon spirits he received in the various degrees of Freemasonry, but that is exactly what he has done. Exactly. And he described it in The Hidden Life in Freemasonry by C.W. Leadbeater, I should say. It was published by the Theosophical Publishing House in 1928. You can find these quotes on page 336, 326, 334. Now, Alice A. Bailey was the reigning queen of the New Age movement until her death in the 1970s. She was the high muckety muck of all high muckety mucks of all time. She wrote over 20 books with the help of her, quote, spirit guide, end quote, the Tibetan master Drajal Kul. I'm not sure I pronounced the first word correctly, so I will spell it for you. Capital D-W-J-H-A-L. The last name, capital K-H-U-L. Mrs. Bailey spoke plainly and truthfully about the fact that the Masonic Lodge was the training school for the leaders of the occult world. Here's what she said of Freemasonry. Quote, "It is a far more occult organization than can be realized and is intended to be the training school for the coming advanced occultists," end quote. You see, folks, I've always given you the references. I've always quoted from their own mouths. I never make anything up. I give you the material that you can then take and duplicate the research and determine for yourselves if I am or am not telling you the truth. Occasionally, I may make a mistake. And if I do, I would appreciate your proving that I made a mistake. And if you can prove that, I will get on the radio and correct it on the very next broadcast. Together with her husband, 32nd degree Mason Foster Bailey, Alice Bailey labored to bring in the reign of the New Age Christ. That's right. Let me tell you that again. Together with her husband, who's a 32nd degree Freemason, Foster Bailey, Alice and Foster labored very hard to bring in the reign of the New Age Christ. Foster states that, quote, "The most important reorientation in the hierarchy is the united focus on preparation for the reappearance of the Christ among men," end quote. And, quote, "The Christ is a living man today." This is what he said. "The Christ is a living man today. He is a great world executive and is actively working to help humanity to grow up spiritually, but not seeking or wanting to control us," end quote. Furthermore, Foster points out that, quote, "The Christ and the hierarchy are focused on New Age actions and when externalized will use New Age techniques," end quote. Foster Bailey also ridiculed the Christ of the Bible and heralded the false gospel of the New Age Christ. He said, quote, "The Christian doctrine that he comes as a Christian to save us from hell and for some distant judgment date is a hangover from humanity's childhood days. He does not come to save us, but to help us save ourselves," end quote. The only judgment I make upon that statement that is clearly anti-Christian. Foster Bailey wrote articles for Masonic magazines and lectured at Masonic lodge halls. His book, The Spirit of Masonry, is still sold in the McCoy Publishing and Masonic Supply Company catalog. It is sobering, ladies and gentlemen, to read in his book how this powerful New Age leader spoke of Masonry as the universal religion. That's right. the universal religion. It will be the religion of the New World Order. And may heaven help you if you're not a member. Quote, is it not possible from a contemplation of this side of Masonic teaching that it may provide all that is necessary for the formulation of a universal religion? May it not be true, as has been said, that if all religions and scriptures were blotted out and only Masonry were left in the world, we could still recover the great plan of salvation? Most earnestly should all true Masons consider this point. A revitalized Masonry, made up of Masons true to their obligations and realizing the mystic tie that binds them all together in one true brotherhood, would also provide a platform so universal that it would meet the need of thinkers of all kinds and of every school of thought. It would thus not only meet a religious need by providing a universal religion, but would also satisfy the mental need felt by all broad-minded thinkers at this time. Foster Bailey, The Spirit of Masonry, London, Lucis Press Limited, 1957, page 109. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen back here, remember when C.W. Leadbeater was talking about how he had accepted within himself the demon spirits he received in the various degrees of Freemasonry? Remember when he said the 33rd degree links the Sovereign Grand Inspector General with the spiritual king of the world himself, that mightiest of adepts who stand at the head of the Great White Lodge in whose strong hands lie the destinies of earth? Well, who is the spiritual king of the world, ladies and gentlemen? Have any of you studied that? It's Lucifer, the rebellious angel who was flung out of heaven, also known as Prometheus, the bringer of light, all this begins to make sense when you read in the book of Genesis where Lucifer, presenting himself as Satan or his agent Satan in the form of a snake, seduced Eve to eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then convinced Eve that she should so seduce Adam to do likewise. Now, in the mysteries, all this is a metaphor. But remember the promise that Satan gave to Eve? He said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm accurate, and you can check it yourself. If I'm not, please let me know. He said that God has forbidden you to eat of this tree. And he's doing that to deceive you and deny you your rightful inheritance. He called it an inheritance. If you eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, ye shall be as gods. He told them that God had lied to them, was deceiving them. And the metaphor, ladies and gentlemen, goes something like this. Adam and Eve were held prisoners in the Garden of Eden by an unjust and vindictive God. They were set free by Lucifer through his agent Satan. Some say both are the same. By the gift of knowledge, read intellect, and through this intellect, man himself will become God. That is the Luciferian philosophy. That is the Masonic philosophy. The most disturbing example of someone being recruited out of Freemasonry into more bizarre occult orders is that of 33rd degree Freemason Aleister Crowley. During his lifetime, Crowley was proclaimed by the press as the most wicked man alive, Can you imagine what you would have to do to gain that kind of a title? Crowley's perverted life left a string of casualties among those who were foolish enough to get close to bad man, evil man, if you will. Crowley's first wife, Rose, entered an insane asylum in 1911. His second wife, Maria, entered an insane asylum in 1931, 2 years after her marriage to Crowley. In a locked room with only Crowley and his son present, Crowley performed a ritual in which his son died. On a London street in 1934, a 19-year-old girl rushed up to him and declared that she wanted to have his baby. Crowley took her to bed, and she too entered an insane asylum. Now, just a very brief autobiographic sketch of Crowley's life is like an evening swim in a sewer, ladies and gentlemen. He called himself the Beast 666, and Lila Waddell, his mistress, displayed the mark of the beast that was tattooed between her breasts. That's right, the number 666. If there ever was a man that was more wicked than Crowley, it would be hard to imagine, although I think I could come up with some names, but I'll refrain from that tonight. Crowley also was an admitted homosexual. And all other established religions. Aleister Crowley opposed religion. He opposed Judaism. He opposed, most of all, Christianity, with a hatred that was frightening. And he said, and I quote, "To me, every dirty act was simply a sacrament of sin, a passionately religious protest against Christianity, which was for me the symbol of all vileness, meanness, treachery, falsehood, and oppression," end quote. One of the most alarming things about Crowley's life was the way that he went from Freemasonry into the occult of the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis. Crowley tells, in his own words, how Freemason Theodore Ruys recruited him into the OTO. Quote, "Although I was admitted to the 33rd and last degree of Freemasonry so long ago as 1900, it was not until the summer of 1912 that my suspicion was confirmed. I speak of my belief that behind the frivolities and convivialities of our greatest institution lay in truth a secret, ineffable, and miraculous potent to control the forces of nature, and not only to make men brethren, but to make them divine. But at the time I speak of a man, Theodore Rus, came to me, a man of those mysterious masters of esoteric Freemasonry, who are alike its eyes and its brains, and who exist in its midst unknown, often even to its acknowledged chiefs. This man had been watching my occult career for some years and deemed me now worthy to partake in the greater mysteries. Kenneth Grant, Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God, New York, New York, Samuel Weiser, 1974, page 174. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this certainly shows that members of other occult orders can work within Freemasonry and do. Even though there are admitted to the public only 33 degrees, in my research I have found degrees into the 90s behind what's called the veil in the Mithraic Rite, and other degrees that go out laterally. In other rites of the lodge, there are degrees within the Templar degree. There are degrees and degrees within degrees, and circles within circles, and secrets within secrets. The OTO was founded in 1895 by the Austrian Freemason Karl Kellner. Freemason Theodore Rus became its leader after Kellner's death. Rus started a magazine called the Oriflamme in 1902 with the help of Freemason Franz Hartmann. A 1912 Jubilee edition of the magazine revealed information about what the OTO activities really were. Quote, "Our order possesses the key which opens up all Masonic and Hermetic secrets, namely, the teaching of sexual magic, and this teaching explains, without exception, all the secrets of nature and the symbolism of Freemasonry and all systems of religion," end quote. In 1912, while holding the rank of 33rd degree Mason, Aleister Crowley became the head of the British OTO. The teachings and the practices of the OTO were amazingly disgusting. Here's a very brief description of their degrees. Listen carefully. Quote, "Today's literature about sex magic relies heavily on practices which were already common in the OTO, or in its later development by Aleister Crowley. The division is as follows. 8th degree OTO is autoerotic practice. 9th degree OTO is heteroerotic practice. The 11th degree OTO is homoerotic practice. This is the traditional sex magic practice as performed under Crowley. Frater, U period, D period, Secrets of the German Sex Magicians, St. Paul, Minnesota, Llewellyn Publications, 1991, page 138. Also, 33rd degree Aleister Crowley proudly called his cult of the OTO true Freemasonry. He said, "I claim for my system that it satisfies all possible requirements of true Freemasonry. It offers a rational basis for universal brotherhood and for universal religion," end quote. Now, how close is this connection between Freemasonry and the OTO? Well, Masonic historian, this is a Masonic historian, Francis King, reveals a closer connection than most Freemasons would ever dare to admit, and I am sure that they are cringing right now, knowing that I am going to reveal it. Here's what Masonic historian Francis King says. Quote, "For the OTO not only had, as we shall see, connections with spurious and clandestine Masonic groups, but functioned as a recruiting office for one of these, for in the classification of members by degrees appended to Ruiz's document, is clearly stated that, quote, candidates are made Freemasons by the directing members, fratres superiores of the OTO, end quote. Francis King, The Secret Rituals of the OTO, New York, New York, Samuel Weiser, 1973, page 13. The fact that Crowley was the head of the OTO while holding the rank of 33rd degree Freemason should forever, forever explode the myth that Freemasonry is a Christian organization. Crowley spoke openly and candidly about his Masonic honors. Quote, this view was confirmed when the arcane schools of John Yarker came to me for review. I wrote to the author, who recognized my title to the 33rd degree and conferred on me the grades of 95 degree Memphis and the 90 degree Mizraim. It seemed as if I had somehow turned a tap. From this time on, I lived in a perfect shower of diplomas, from Bucharest to Salt Lake City. I possess more exalted titles than I have ever been able to count. I am supposed to know more secret signs, tokens, passwords, grand words, grips, and so on than I could actually learn in a dozen lives. An elephant would break down under the insignia I am entitled to wear. End quote. You will find that in John Simons and Kenneth Grant, The Confessions of Aleister Crowley, New York, New York, Bantam Books, 1971, on page 684. You see, folks, they cannot wiggle out from under ye accuse. In their own words, ye accuse. In the Confessions of Aleister Crowley, Crowley spoke with great admiration about the Royal Arc degree. Quote, I supposed myself to have reached the summit of success when I restored the secret word of the Royal Ark. In this case, tradition had preserved the word almost intact, end quote. It is perfectly understandable that this hatred of Christianity, or this hater of Christianity, would love the Royal Ark degree of Freemasonry. You see, in this degree, Freemasons blaspheme the God of the Bible by uniting God's name with pagan gods. It would drive an Orthodox Jew right up the wall. The secret word of the Royal Ark that Crowley is referring to is Yah Beulon. The Yah represents Jehovah, Beul represents the pagan god Baal, and On represents the Egyptian god of the sun. So it's no wonder Crowley's satanic heart jumped for joy when he was able to blaspheme the God of the Bible by uniting the true God of the Bible with the pagan god Baal, to whom human children were sacrificed. The Bible tells us, quote, they have also built the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings to Baal, which I did not command or speak, nor did it come into my mind, end quote. The meaning, ladies and gentlemen, of the secret word in the Royal Ark degree is confirmed by an excellent authority. Can't get any better than this. It's the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Albert G. Mackey. Baal signifies Lord or Master and occurs several times in the Bible as a part of the names of various gods. Alone, the word applies to the sun god, the supreme male deity of the Syro-Phoenician nations. For an account of his worship, read 1 Kings chapter 18. With Yah and On, it has been introduced into the Royal Ark system as a representative of the Tetragrammaton. Tetragrammaton. The OTO describes itself as an organization that is dedicated to follow the doctrine of Crowley. The Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO, is an initiate body, or initiatic body, I should say, composed of men and women who have accepted the principles of the Book of the Law, which was transmitted, he claims, through Aleister Crowley by some spirit master. Quote, "The book is conceived to be a perfect transmission of the divine, freed from any defects of human interference. As such, it is a luminous vehicle of truth that can serve as an infallible guide to human conduct. Aleister Crowley will at least be remembered as the greatest occult genius of the 20th century. His influence on modern occultism is incalculable, penetrating every Western school." Arminius, editor, Aleister Crowley, the Master Therion, The Equinox Publishing Company, 1990, Volume 3, Number 10:87. Any organization, ladies and gentlemen, that follows the teachings of Crowley must be taken very seriously. Listen to me. You have a habit of dismissing these things as not being important and not worthy of the study of intelligent, reasonable men and women. You're wrong. The following quotes are from the Book of the Law that the OTO endorsed as a perfect transmission of the divine and luminous vehicle of truth that can serve as an infallible guide to human conduct. Quote, "Worship with me with fire and blood. Worship me with swords and with spears. Let the women be girt with a sword before me. Let blood flow to my name. Trample down the heathen. Be upon them, O warrior. I will give you petrovenal of their flesh to eat. Sacrifice cattle, little and big, after a child. The best blood is of the moon monthly. Then the fresh blood of a child are dropping from the host of heaven, then of enemies, then of priests, are of the worshippers. Last of some beast, no matter what. With my hawk's head, I peck at the eyes of Jesus as he hangs upon the cross. There is no law beyond, do what thou wilt." The Equinox, Volume 3, Number 10:39, pages 40, 42, 43. The following quotes from Crowley's Magic in Theory and Practice will further prove what should be our concern. Quote, "For the highest spiritual working, one must accordingly choose that victim which contains the greatest and purest force. A male child of perfect innocence and high intelligence is the most satisfactory and suitable victim. But the bloody sacrifice, though more dangerous, is more efficacious, and for nearly all purposes, human sacrifice is the best. In the sacrifice during invocation, however, it may be said without fear of contradiction that the death of the victim should coincide with the supreme invocation." Aleister Crowley, Magic in Theory and Practice, New York, New York, Magical Child Publishing, Incorporated, 1990, pages 95 and 96. Notice the name of the publishing company, Magical Child. Spelled M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L and C-H-I-L-D-E. Now, as we continue to look at Freemasonry and the occult, we need to look at another secret order that has networked with Freemasonry for many years, the Rosicrucian Society, or the Ancient Order of Rosicruci. Much could be written about the various Rosicrucian orders and their relationship to the Lodge, but for the purpose of our examination tonight, we're just going to mention only one, the Rosicruciana in Anglia. One had to be at least a Master Mason just to belong to this organization, and it is of particular interest because the members of this secret order gave birth to yet another secret society called, and you've heard about this secret society from me on many previous broadcasts, the Golden Dawn. In some respects, Westcott's Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was a byproduct of his connection with a Masonic Rosicrucian fraternity called the Rosicrucian Society of England, also known as the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, or more familiarly as the Society of the Rose, R, capital S-O-C, period, capital R-O-S, period, and if you see that after anyone's signature, they are a member. Membership was and is confined to Master Masons. It was not a Masonic lodge, but an esoteric society made up solely and strictly of Freemasons who were interested in occultism, the Kabbalah in particular, and Masonic symbolism. All three of the original founders of the Golden Dawn were Freemasons: Dr. William Wynne Westcott, Dr. William Woodman, and S.L. McGregor Mathers. And as we shall see, ladies and gentlemen, the ties between the Golden Dawn and the Masonic Lodge go much deeper than the fact that all were Freemasons, although that's enough. Dr. William Wynne Westcott's interests were occultism and Freemasonry. In order to practice ritual magic, he established an occult secret society called the Golden Dawn in London in 1888. Since its founding, it has been one of the most secretive and influential of all occult orders. Madame Blavatsky was so excited about the existence of the Golden Dawn that she made an intriguing announcement calling the order the Hermetic Students of the G period, D period in the Outer. In the June 1889 issue of her theosophical periodical Lucifer, world-renowned witches Janet and Stuart Farrar, and I'm not calling them witches to be mean, they were self-confessed witches. Janet and Stuart Farrar, authors of A Witch's Bible Complete, give credit to the Freemasons of the Golden Dawn for the modern cult explosion that we are experiencing today. Here's what they say, quote, "It is generally agreed that the biggest single influence in the modern expansion of ritual magic and the occult explosion in general in the Western world was the Golden Dawn. This magical fraternity, founded by Freemasons at the end of the 19th century, developed a complex ritual system with 10 degrees of initiation relating to the Kabbalistic Sephiroth, or Sephiroth, depending upon how you want to pronounce it. Janet Farrar and Stuart Farrar, The Life and Times of a Modern Witch, Custer, Washington, Phoenix Publishing Company, 1988, page 121. And as we continue our examination, we will see that these witches were extremely correct, ladies and gentlemen. They were extremely correct with all of those statements. Dr. William Robert Woodman, an eminent Freemason, was also one of the original founders that worked very hard to establish the Golden Dawn. He was a member of the Society of the Rose, Anglia. He also was a Hebrew scholar, and he was a student of the Kabbalah, and also wrote many occult manuscripts. All of this is reemerging today, and you'll find in Los Angeles, California, one of the greatest reemergences and followings of Kabbalistic study that you've ever dreamed could possibly happen. William Wynne Westcott was a London coroner who was forced to choose between his job and the Golden Dawn when the public became aware of his occult activities. Westcott chose to resign as head of the Golden Dawn, at least visibly in the public eye. Westcott translated the Sefer Yetzirah, a Kabbalistic text, and also wrote a book titled The Magical Mason. This Golden Dawn founder belonged to a truly impressive list of occult organizations, which gives us at least an idea of how these occult organizations network. And boy, do they network. Westcott, an English Freemason, appointed junior grand deacon to the Grand Lodge of England in 1902, and the head of the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia and Golden Dawn, was also the secretary of the Rite of Swedenborg, Knight Kadosh, in ancient and accepted Scottish rites, Grand Standard Bearer, Royal Ark, Grand Lodge of England, and Regent of the Illuminati, and was on intimate terms with one of its founders, the German Theodor Rus, 33rd, 90th, and 96th degrees. Westcott also worked closely with Theodor Rus, the head of the OTO. Since their early existence, ladies and gentlemen, the OTO and the Golden Dawn have maintained very close ties. The father of modern Satanism, Aleister Crowley, was a member, you see, of both organizations. We will continue this. In the meantime, study what you've just heard. I hope that you took notes. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. You're listening to 98.5 FM, Eager, Arizona.
There were a lot of rumors tonight. that my ex amour, John Lennon, would be here. I say ex, because I've never made it a practice to associate with men with hair on their faces. Friends called me second, of course. This song I recorded in hopes that John would hear it. And he did, and he loved it, and he came and introduced himself to me and thanked me for all the money we helped make for him by recording this song. Money is a universal language, except tonight when it's music, and all weekend when it's been music. And boy, how about Mike Bloomfield? I'd like to join a flood there. You're going to hear a lot about him. People have heard a lot about him already, but boy, watch out. Here comes the playboy, playboy. So we'd like to sing this song, which is kind of a plaintive plea on my part. It got me what I wanted. I hope I get you what you want. No rumors. Somebody asked me today when I was going to have the baby. That's funny. All right, let's get it together, as Dino would say. I call your name, but you're not there. Was I to blame for being unfair? Don't you know?